Welcome into Diamonds in the Desert. I'm Jordan Hamm. It's been a minute since we have had a Diamonds in the Desert episode. Been in and out of town, actually working on a project right now. I'm pretty excited to share with you guys. It's under the Diamonds in the Desert umbrella regarding the MLB draft and what the Diamondbacks were able to do. That's going to be a series coming out in the next week or so. But wanted to take a look at the current team going on. They just wrapped up the first half of the MLB season, currently at 46 and 45, right in the thick of it. For the NL West, if you don't count the Los Angeles Dodgers, who have really just run away with things, 14 and a half games up on them currently. But everybody's really hanging around. It's a competitive NL West, with obviously the juggernaut, with the Thanos in there, and the Dodgers, who have just at 60 and 31 currently, just an absolute tear for them. But everybody's right in that range, 46 and 45. So I wanted to revisit this first half and go back to what this team was expected to do when it was coming into the season. How has that differed? Were these predictions kind of right on the money in some aspects? What's been going on? And obviously, there was a lot of question marks coming in when you're replacing Paul Goldschmidt, when you're replacing AJ Pollock, when you're replacing Patrick Corbin. Brad Boxberger has moved on. There were some key figures that had moved on, and you didn't know where that was going to take this ball club, what sort of team they were going to be. And at the beginning of the year, I kind of felt like they would be a touch above 500. And certainly in the mix, obviously depending on the year, you can sneak into the wild card if you have 84 wins. There are some years you need 90 wins to get in. I think the Diamondbacks are going to be probably closer to that 84 win range, but I feel like they're kind of right on pace where we should be. So wanted to kind of break it down at each level of the roster and who surprised us, who has stepped up nicely, who do we need to see more out of in the second half if the Diamondbacks want to make that playoff push. And, of course, then we'll go into what do the Diamondbacks do with the trade deadline about 3 weeks away. What could Mike Hazen be thinking? So let's kick things off with hitting. I think a lot of people thought that the Diamondbacks would take a huge step back with Paul Goldschmidt heading to the Cardinals, AJ Pollock with the Dodgers, two key cogs in the machine that had the offense going. Then you mix in Jake Lamb trying a new position at first base, Jake Lamb then getting hurt. How could Christian Walker step up to be that power bat in the middle of the lineup? Ketel Marte was jumping around multiple positions. Could that impede his hitting ability while he's trying to focus and juggle a lot of things? And look, the 2 years with Torey Lovello, we've seen right around this time of year, the Diamondbacks kind of falter in their offensive ways. And I have to give Darnell Coles a lot of credit because really from the get-go, the Diamondbacks have been one of the better hitting teams in the league. They've been crushing it, and it's been David Peralta, Eduardo Escobar, Ketel Marte. Those have been the guys that have been right in the middle of it. Right now, they are 10th in the MLB in runs scored so far. So you have, when you're looking at the National League, Atlanta's ahead of them, Colorado, the Dodgers, and then Arizona. So they've been able to put up more runs than the Chicago Cubs, a pretty vaunted offense. But this is, I think, an offense that has very much overachieved, but still shown, taken those progressions. David Peralta has stepped up and always been a consistent hitter, but usually the third or fourth option in the lineup. He has a more prominent role, I feel, and he's certainly delivered. Ketel Marte's power numbers specifically, 20 home runs in the first half, like absolutely crushing it. And you saw entering last season, they signed him to that extension, that first real bit of, a sizable contract for him. And he has certainly delivered. I feel like he forced it a bit last year, but look at the steps he's made from last year to this year. There's a reason he's going to the All-Star game. And then also Eduardo Escobar, a midseason pickup last season, has done great for the Diamondbacks and for the clubhouse, being a leader, keeping things light. But him and Marte are two guys that have 100 hits in the first half, and that's only happened. That's like the fifth time that's happened in Diamondbacks history. So they're leading the charge. You look behind the plate, Carson Kelly. Carson Kelly's hitting well enough right now that the Diamondbacks, in their current iteration with Mike Hazen and Torey Lovello, they've always had three catchers. Carson Kelly was delivering enough that they felt it was possible to navigate the catcher position with Carson Kelly and with Alex Avila. They then moved John Ryan Murphy to the minor leagues. Part of that also trying to get some more arms up here because there have been a lot of injuries. We'll get to that in a little bit. But they felt comfortable being able to do that because of the way Carson Kelly is hit. About 275. The big thing for him coming into this season was getting those opportunities, and he wasn't getting that behind Yadi Molina last year for the Cardinals. So he's stepped up into a nice spot. Nick Ahmed, I think, has been pretty, you know, right there, par for the course. You know, he's got some pop. He's hitting at a little bit higher of a batting average than he usually does. That's been great. And then Adam Jones, what a great signing. 1 year, $3 million. I thought it was a great signing. That it's something I talked about, you know, maybe the potentially the Diamondbacks doing if they could get the right deal in February. They ended up signing him in March, and he hit the ground running. There was no real hangover from him or, you know, feeling the need to get caught up. He was already caught up. He was working out. And it proved that much more important when Steven Souza went down, to have that guy in the outfield, that veteran, to pair with a guy like David Peralta. You know, he's just done such a great job. Another great guy that's been in the clubhouse, but has certainly delivered statistically and done a really, really good job, you know, just delivering for this team so far. Currently hitting 264, 13 home runs, 44 RBI. The runs scored right now, like I said, top 10. I don't think anyone was really projecting that. At the first base position, you had Christian Walker, Kevin Crone. They've been serviceable. I think that's the best way to put it. They're both young hitters. There's going to have some ups and downs. They can crush the ball when they connect on it, but they're navigating having teams that can scout them and scout them thoroughly and trying to counteract that. So there's been some ups and downs from that end. But look, when you look at what Christian Walker has done, 79 hits in the first half, 263, played much, I don't want to say much better defense, but I think he's surprising people with the defense that he's been playing. I think he's been very good in the first half, and looking to see how he, you know, does in the second half and kind of counteracts that, I don't want to call it a rookie wall, but a wall of, you know, he has not played this much in quite a few years. So we'll see how he does with that. But I think offensively, that's been the pleasant surprise for this team. So let's focus now to starting pitching. And look, this starts and ends with Zach Greinke. Zach Greinke, the highest paid per year player when it comes to pitchers. And I feel like this is really the first year with the Diamondbacks where he has earned those stripes, being the true ace. He's always been pretty darn good. He finished back-to-back years, 2017, 2018, 3.2 ERA, 3.21 ERA, gotten his strikeouts. But I feel like he's well on his way to what the Diamondbacks wanted when they were able to make that deal for him a couple of years ago. A 2.73 ERA, just been absolutely dominant. It feels so much like he has settled in to his new repertoire. He's not going to blow guys away necessarily with his fastball anymore, but he's throwing a 59-mile-per-hour Ephus pitch, and then he can throw a 92-mile-an-hour fastball that paints the corner. And I feel like he's been the true ace. When you look a couple years ago, it's kind of is it a Robbie Ray, Pat Corbin? Who's the ace? There's no question this year. It's Zach Greinke, and he has been just absolutely phenomenal. This is a tough group to gauge because there's been a lot of injuries. There's been some struggles, but I think it's just so much more is magnified because of these injuries. Luke Weaver has been so good in the 62 innings that he threw before he got hurt. He was pitching like a true number two. And I feel like this trade for Paul Goldschmidt, obviously tough to move on from a superstar, but when you're getting a guy like Carson Kelly who's hitting as well as he was, Luke Weaver is pitching as well as he was before he went down, it kind of softens the blow a little bit. And he was a guy that was so good. You had Taylor Clark come up and down a bit. He suffered an injury. John Duplantier suffered an injury as well. So this is the area I feel like has been most depleted by injuries. And this is where the depth that they had at the beginning of the year has been useful. But they've pretty much depleted that depth already just because of these injuries. Taijuan Walker, his timeline is set back now too. So the rotation is tough to gauge. But I think when you look at what Zach Greinke has been able to do, he's been ace quality. Merrill Kelly. No one knew how he was going to do at the major league level. He performed certainly in Korea, but to say that he would give you 105 innings in the first half, a 4 ERA, about 80 strikeouts, and keep you in games as a 5, like that, I think that's great if you're the Arizona Diamondbacks. Like, he has certainly delivered, and you can kind of tell it all comes down to efficiency for him. When he's able to get deep in the ball game, he is pretty darn effective. But you have a couple of those starts sprinkled in where it's 4 1/3, 5 innings, that sort of thing. That's where I think there's the growth that he could have in the second half, trying to minimize that. And then Robbie Ray, I think wanted to kind of have his prove it year this year, and I think he's done pretty good. I'll keep it at that. 3.96 ERA, 104 innings, 137 strikeouts. You saw what he could do this past week in his last start where he was just lights out. And then kind of similar to Merrill Kelly, you saw where he is forced to throw a lot of pitches and can't get deep. Now, in previous years, I don't think that was as big of a deal because of how well the bullpen has been throwing. But this year, it's a whole different ball game. So with this rotation, you throw that in, you throw Zach Godley and his struggles in, they've certainly made do. I think that they're in a spot they can certainly build upon it. If the Diamondbacks are going to make a move, I would think adding a starter would make a lot of sense. They had been rumored to be discussing Mike Leake. A veteran arm, an ASU guy, a longtime Red starter currently with the Mariners. That could certainly be an option. But then we also just saw Alex Young, 2 starts in, and has been very effective and like exactly what this team needs, just a guy that can eat innings. But it's such a small sample size, you can't really go off that too much. 2 very, very strong starts from the rookie out of TCU. But let's get back to, I mentioned Robbie Ray when he's not able to go deep into the ball game. Usually you have a whole group of guys that can then pick it up, kind of take care of business. This is the group that has surprised me the most in the worst way this year for the Diamondbacks, and that's the bullpen. At the start of the year, I said that this was going to be the group that would carry this team, the strongest group that could shorten the ball game for some of these starters if they weren't able to go deep in the game. And they've been the most disappointing. I think Greg Holland's been very good, aside from maybe one of the worst performances I've seen from a relief pitcher when he walked 4 straight. CJ McFarland comes in, walks a 5th, and the Dodgers end up walking it off that way. But overall, like, what else can you ask from Greg Holland? He's been very effective, very efficient, and this has been kind of the MO of Mike Hazen, being able to find a guy as a veteran, proven commodity closer. And look, Greg Holland was a little bit less of a commodity, proven commodity, than Fernando Rodney, than Brad Boxberger. Holland was coming off a pretty rough year, bouncing back and forth between a couple of teams last year, but I think he stepped in, and I am comfortable when he comes into the ballgame. And I think as a closer, that's all you can really ask for. Archie Bradley, Yoshi Hirano, TJ McFarland, Matt Andrees. I mean, those first three names, those were kind of the staples of making a playoff run and the Diamondbacks being super successful. Those were the guys that would just shut the door. Archie Bradley was that trump card that could just close the door in the big situations. And we haven't seen that. ERA right around 5. Just every time you feel like he starts to get something going, just something funky happens and the wheels kind of come off. Yoshi Hirano has not been as effective as he has previous in the previous year where he was pretty darn good. TJ McFarland started the year on the disabled list, 6.37 ERA right now. And he was Mr. Versatility. He was the long reliever that could come in and give you three innings, whether it was mop-up duty or just the starter doesn't go as deep as you want him to, and you need to save the bullpen a little bit. McFarland was usually that guy. He could also come in a high-pressure situation and strike out a lefty, no problem. In the previous years, he's really struggled this year. And usually he has stronger first halves, and then at least this was the case 2 years ago. He had a very strong first half, kind of struggled in the second half. We'll see if he can kind of flip that script and recover in the second half. But these are the guys that you're going to need if you want to make that postseason run, because you're right in the thick of it for the wild card right now. As it stands right now, they're a game and a half out behind Washington, behind Philadelphia. Milwaukee is a game ahead of them. St. Louis, Colorado, Pittsburgh, San Diego, all within 2.5 games of that spot. So familiar foes, certainly. A lot of NL Central, a lot of NL West that you're going to have to battle it out against if you want to make a playoff push. And they need these guys in the bullpen to really figure it out. Yoan Lopez, it's felt like it's been a bit of a long time coming for him to make his debut, but you heard about the talent, you heard about the size and the power arm that he possessed. 1.5 ERA in the first half, 26 strikeouts in 34 innings. He's been very good. He's been that eighth inning guy. Him and Holland I feel very comfortable with, but if they can shore up the rest of that bullpen, then you're in a pretty good spot. So now let's transition to fielding. Look, the Diamondbacks, one of the better fielding teams in the entire league, and I don't think that is too surprising because that's been kind of the MO of Torey Lovello, of Mike Haseman, find versatile guys that can defend, least amount of errors in the National League, and third overall in the league. Just been very impressive. I was pretty against having Ketel Marte in center field at the beginning of the year. That was more because it felt like it was a necessity and there were depth issues when you brought in Adam Jones and could move some guys around. And then it was more, we can get Ketel Marte more at bats, moving him to center field from time to time, but still being an elite middle infielder with Nick Ahmed. It's been, I think, very good. And he has surprised me with his spatial awareness when he's out there. And you knew he could fly, you knew he could flash the leather, but just doing things that veteran outfielders are able to do, he's doing that in his first year. So he's been a pleasant surprise. Obviously, Christian Walker has been, I think, a better first baseman than many, defensive first baseman that many anticipated. I think he's been very good there. That's obviously one of the big concerns moving on from Paul Goldschmidt, not only the bat, but the glove. Christian Walker has been pretty darn good at first base. Eduardo Escobar, third base, rock solid. And then you have Carson Kelly and Alex Avila behind the plate, and they've been very good as well. In terms of the guys who have stepped up, the guys who might have come out of nowhere, I think Walker fits that bill. Carson Kelly certainly fits that bill, and Yoan Lopez and Merrill Kelly. Those are the guys that were the big question marks that we knew were going to have big roles, and we didn't know how they were going to perform. I feel like they've done a tremendous job in their first bit of expanded roles or taking those next steps. And being able to adjust. So the Diamondbacks are right in the thick of things, as I've said. And it's kind of, I feel like they've overachieved a little bit for my expectations, but I just felt like they were going to be right around 500, right? If some things fall their way. And look, there have been some bad bullpen implosions. If you take those out of the equation, I think they're in a wild card spot right now. You know, there are three or four games that jump out right away. It seems like it always happens against the Rockies. Rockies or Dodgers. You take those away and those turn into wins all of a sudden, you're three or four games ahead in the wild card. So there's something there. We'll see what happens with the trade deadline. I think I find it hard to believe that Zach Greinke would be dealt. But that being said, I think this is the most leverage Mike Hazen has and has had since he took over to get a massive haul for Zach Greinke for a team that wants to make a big postseason push, World Series push. These are the types of numbers you wanted to see out of Zach Greinke if the Diamondbacks were forced to be in that situation. So if someone is going to sell them the farm and give them some young talent that they can extend out and free up some space on their salary cap, I don't see how Mike Hazen doesn't do that. But the Diamondbacks are in the driver's seat. They're not just going to trade him for the sake of trading him because of how good he's been, and you have another year of control for him. Because I think it would be wise to hang on to him and build around it a little bit. But again, a team can certainly overpay, and that's the type of situation I think Mike Hazen has been waiting for. Adam Jones could be another guy if things start to go awry a little bit. Look, 1 year, $3 million, you can move on and get a veteran outfielder pretty quickly if you're a playoff team. Like, yes. I think that could be a situation as well. It'll be interesting to see the end of July, but I feel like the Diamondbacks don't feel any pressure to make moves, and that's usually when teams make the best moves because it can truly improve the ball club. It'll be an interesting second half, definitely. Once again, make sure to stay tuned over the next week or so for this Diamonds in the Desert. We'll call it Draft Day Series. You're going to learn a lot about some of these high draft picks that were selected by the Diamondbacks and could really transform the minor leagues and the future of the Arizona Diamondbacks. So thanks so much for listening. Go ahead and tweet me your thoughts for the Diamondbacks first half and predictions for the second half. This has been Diamonds in the Desert on Sports 360 AZ.